Log date, May 11th. This is Akira again. I really don't know who else it would be. I just finished up dinner, so I figured I'd come up and finish my entry from yesterday. I kinda left off on a pretty somber note. Sylvia called me, so I had to go see what she needed. However, I want to continue from there. It felt kind of relieving, explaining it all. It was hard, but I feel like I got something off my chest. Just a little bit, but still. So, in the back of the car, I watched as my home became smaller and smaller in the distance. I could see the empty eyes of those two men in the front rearview mirror, seemingly focused on nothing. It was just a normal day for them. They couldn't even fathom the terror I was experiencing. A few feeble sobs heaved out of me. I choked hard from the gag, which only made me want to cry harder. I wailed on and on as I went through the cycle of crying in pain. The men said nothing. Their unmoving faces just looked on emotionlessly as they took me further and further away from my home. I stared at the windshield. That's when I noticed. The car had stopped moving. All the cars on the road had, in fact. I knew what was happening. I turned to see Worldstopper hunched down next to me, barely seeming to squeeze into the tiny space of the back seat. His eyes were sharp, and the air around us tingled with urgency. He popped open the car door and looked at me. I knew what he was saying. We had to go. Now. I scooted out of the car and followed him across the street. He was able to float a lot faster than I could run on my tiny little legs, so it was hard for me to keep up with him. The gag didn't make it any easier. I kept choking and running short of breath. It took Worldstopper no time to notice this. He scooped me up and carried me a few blocks. Eventually, we got to the little school where my kindergarten was. He took me behind the building and set me down near a garbage bin. He rummaged around in it for a bit before finding what he was looking for. A long, thin piece of green glass, probably from a broken bottle or something. He crouched down next to me and gave me a message. Hold very still. The air quivered as he slowly cut through the band of the gag. Finally, it snapped free and I spit it out. Fresh air rushed into my lungs. I inhaled deeply. It was great to be able to breathe again. We continued on. I went for a little while on foot, as long as I could, at least. We were only a few blocks down from the school when Worldstopper had to pick me up again. We had made it to the edge of the city I recognized from when me and my family went out on weekends when Worldstopper darted into a bush outside a fence. I yelped, and he put a finger to where his mouth would have been on his face if he had one. I heard a boom and knew our time stop had ended. I could feel my heart pounding as we sat in the bush, waiting till he had enough energy for us to go again. I remember it being a very long time before Worldstopper did the next freeze. I think it was because he was trying to gather his strength, so we'd have a longer pause to travel during this time. When I finally heard the boom again, he scooped me up into his arms and stepped out of the bushes. I watched as the streetlights went by us as we traveled deeper into the city. Eventually, I could recognize none of the buildings we were going by. I asked Worldstopper where we were going. He told me somewhere safe, where he knew someone who would protect us. I trusted him completely, but still, I ached to go home. I wanted my warm bed and my parents to kiss me goodnight. The streets were so cold, even with time stopped. I didn't like these unfamiliar sights. I wanted to go home. Worldstopper could clearly tell. He held me tighter and tried to comfort me. I know you want to go home, my child, he soothed, but we can't go back there. It's not safe anymore. Softly, I began to cry. Worldstopper simply rubbed my back, and warm air brushed against my face. I knew he was trying to comfort me, and I felt grateful. Still, nothing, not even he, could soothe my fear. Eventually, brighter lights came into view. We approached a large building, one surrounded by many different roads. Worldstopper took us around the back of it. I spotted many airplanes sitting in the darkness. I only recognized them from pictures in the board books I had at home. We went over to one of the planes, which was being loaded with baggage. Worldstopper crouched down and took me up the conveyor belt. The compartment inside was barely lit. He set me down and instructed me to wait for him. He foraged around the compartment, swiftly moving around bags and cases until he finally found what he was looking for, a dog crate. It wasn't super small, but it wasn't exactly the most spacious thing in the world. He set it down next to the pile of bags and popped open the door. He looked at me and gestured to the entrance. He wanted me to climb in. If it had been anyone else other than Worldstopper telling me to go in that crate, I wouldn't have even thought of touching the thing. But it was him, and even if he was telling me to do something scary, I knew he was asking me to do it for my sake. I crawled into the crate. The plastic inside was hard and cold, and I could feel my shoulders digging into the top of it. Worldstopper looked down at me and gave me one of his nods. He clicked the door closed, and time resumed. I heard the conveyor belt restart and the thump of bags being loaded on board. My breath picked up, and I wanted to cry, but I felt a warmth around me that kept me from doing so. I knew it was Worldstopper's doing. He was probably hiding in the shadows somewhere, away from the view of the staff outside. The air surrounded me, soothing my body and soaking up my fear. I felt a similar warmth in my chest. It was like the non-physical manifestation of an embrace. Soon, all the bags were loaded. The door was shut, and the compartment went pitch black. Worldstopper's comfort was no longer enough to keep me from letting out a wail. He appeared in front of me to hush me quickly. I could barely see him in the blackness. He placed a hand against the metal door of the crate. I pressed my palm into his. It was the closest thing he could do to holding my hand in the dark. Suddenly, a rumbling rose up underneath us. My stomach squeezed into a knot as I felt the compartment begin to move. I yelped, but then remembered I was supposed to be quiet. I looked forward, where Worldstopper supposedly was. I asked what was happening. "We're taking off." That was his only answer. Our pace quickened, and soon the compartment was speeding through wherever we were. My heartbeat raced with it. The ground beneath us shook violently, giving inconsistent bumps every now and then. I pressed my hand harder against those bars, against Worldstopper's hand. I felt the warm air squeeze around me as if he was desperately holding on to me. It was almost suffocating. Finally, the shaking stopped, and we smoothed out. We were still speeding like gazelle, but at least we weren't getting rattled around vigorously anymore. I began to calm down, that is, until the tilting started. I noticed the view in front of me begin to shift before I felt my crate begin to slide. I felt a sharp pain shoot through my chest. Luckily, Worldstopper managed to catch me before my crate slid too far. However, gravity quickly pulled me away from him on the next tilt. He caught me that time, too. I heard him wrap his arms around my crate tightly to make sure I wouldn't slip away again. As nauseating as the rest of the tilting was, Worldstopper managed to hold me in place the whole time. Soon, the ground beneath us became consistent again. Worldstopper left me for a few minutes. I could hear him going through the bags across from me. I heard the sound of zippers, so I knew this time he was actually opening them. I tried to squint in the dark to see him, but it was no use. Eventually, I heard a boom, and a light flickered in front of me. Worldstopper stood there, holding a flashlight. He opened up the door of my crate and told me I could come out. Relieved, I slid out. I stood up and stretched, glad to be able to move again. Any forward movement of our compartment had ceased, which I was glad for. Worldstopper leaned down, a large bag of cheese puffs in his hand. Suddenly, I noticed the ache of my empty stomach. I hadn't eaten in hours, but I had been too terrified to notice my hunger. I popped the bag open and began stuffing the puffs into my mouth. Worldstopper sat next to me and watched as I gulped them down. I got through almost half the bag before Worldstopper put a hand on my shoulder. He told me I shouldn't give myself a stomach ache. He'd hold on to the bag so I could eat more later. I spent a few minutes with my head laid in his lap, feeling the warm, tingling sensation of his form on my face. He rubbed my back for a while. Eventually, he had to tell me to get up, as he was going to resume time again. I pouted a bit, not wanting to go back to my tiny prison, but I gave in. I crawled back into the crate and he shut the door. Worldstopper kept the flashlight on so I could see its face. I pressed my hand against his again, and a boom sounded. We were back in motion. I was as okay as I had been on the first part of the ride for a bit, but it didn't last. The nausea from the motion and the cheese puffs set in quickly, and I was soon clenching my stomach. Worldstopper did his best to distract me from my pain. He began to tell me stories, ones of a faraway land where the ground was nothing but sand, yet temples and monuments still stood high on it as if it were firm as stone. He painted pictures in my mind of golden palaces fit for royalty and ancient tombs where treasures sat, waiting endlessly to be discovered. He told me of travelers and warriors and heroes and their great quests for glory. He told me of their guardians, powerful and mighty beings with abilities far beyond the imagination of anyone who had yet to see them, that could bend the world to their will. I sat intently, hanging on to every bit. I had never heard of such an incredible place. My parents had never told me about anything of the sort. It sounded astonishing. I asked him if he had ever been there before. A bump of amusement rose in my chest. He had. "This land is called Egypt," he told me, "and it was every bit as beautiful as I describe it." I recognized the name from my uncle's stories as a place my mother had once been. I wondered why she had never told me much about it if it was such a magnificent place. "Could you take me there someday?" I asked. I felt something heavy sink inside of me. The air went flat for a split second. I looked at Worldstopper. The normal vibration around me picked back up, and he returned my gaze, a sad smile in his eyes. "Someday," he promised. "I will, my child. Someday." He went back to telling me stories of Egypt, luring my mind away from the pain in my stomach. I soon felt us tilting again. Worldstopper held my crate tightly to make sure I didn't slide around. Horrible pressure rose in my ears. I began to cry, and the warmth in the air surrounded me again. Worldstopper whispered to me, telling me to try yawning. I did, but it didn't really help. Eventually, the tilting came to an end, but the rumbling beneath us that I had felt during the beginning of our ride returned. I wailed louder, and Worldstopper tried to calm me. "Don't worry, it's almost over." His message was like a gentle tingle in the front of my mind. He was right. Soon, the rumbling ended, and our compartment came to a complete standstill. Worldstopper once again instructed me to be quiet. After a few minutes, the door we came in through opened. There was a boom. Worldstopper opened my crate and scooped me out of it. He carried me quickly out the compartment door. The building we came to was very similar to the one we saw before boarding the plane. This one was more of a tan color. I found it somewhat difficult to believe we had moved at all, but my suspicions were corrected as we moved into the city. The buildings were completely different from those in the city I recognized, and the streets were made of cobblestone, not pavement. Little lanterns lined our path. A great tower sat in the distance, lit up like a Christmas decoration. I asked Worldstopper where we were. He answered, "Paris." We traveled down the road. My stomach still ached, and my eyelids were starting to grow heavy. I let my head fall onto Worldstopper's shoulder. The rhythm of his floating was gentle, like the rocking of a cradle. I watched through flickering lids as the buildings around us slowly grew smaller, the streets narrower. There were fewer cars. The warmth that was Worldstopper's message seeped into my mind. "Rest, my child. We'll arrive soon." I nodded absentmindedly. The sun was beginning to rise in the distance, a gentle orange glow engulfing the horizon. It was beautiful. My eyes fell closed on it. It was the last thing I saw before falling asleep.
"Akira, dinner will be ready in 30 minutes."
"Okay, I'll be down then." Sorry, Sylvia was calling me. This is actually the point where I'm going to be talking about her now. I woke up in a large bed. The mattress sagged beneath me despite how small I was, and the air smelled like old parchment. Dust tickled my nose. My stomach clenched painfully. I felt Worldstopper's hand on my own. I turned my head to see him sitting next to the bed. His gaze was gentle. The air around me was a lot calmer than it was while we were going down the street. It was relieving. The street. Slowly, the memories from the previous night trickled back into my mind. Summoning Worldstopper, the plane, my parents' screams. I sat up and felt a pang in my stomach. Worldstopper leaned in. "My child, we're safe," he promised. Yet the strangeness of my surroundings didn't support his claim. I looked around at the old room, the china plates and the old statues on the shelves, the dust-covered bookcases. It all seemed so alien. My breath grew shallow. Suddenly, a figure appeared in the door. She was slim and cloaked in heavy black garments. Her silvery white hair ran down her back. Her gray eyes were almost ghost-like. She held a tray, which probably had some kind of food on it. "Is she awake?" she asked. I've made her food. She came up closer to the bed. All of a sudden, everything was just too much for me. My stomach lurched and I felt acid burn in my throat. I heaved over, and all the cheese puffs from the plane ride the previous night came out right onto the bedspread. World Stopper clutched my hand as I fell back into the mattress. The silver-haired woman was really not pleased by this. Her eyes narrowed, but she kept calm and asked World Stopper to move me to the upstairs bedroom. He did. I fell back asleep quickly after I got settled up there. When I woke up again, the woman was back with the tray. She came up to my bed and told me to sit up. I did. She set the tray down on my lap. "Here," she said. "Eat slowly, okay?" I stared at her for a moment. Her gaze was as cold as winter ice. The way she held herself, so sturdy and straight, even as she sat on the bed, gave her an intimidating presence. There was a warm wave in the air. "It's okay," World Stopper reassured me. "It's safe to eat. She's here to help you." Slowly, I took a bite of the roll set in front of me. It was warm and fluffy, like the bread Mom used to make. "Mom." I felt the tears coming back. The woman noticed. "It's all right," she said. There was little comfort in her voice. It was almost monotone. "My name is Sylvia. Can you tell me yours?" I swallowed my roll and nodded. "Akira," I said. "Ah," Sylvia looked up at World Stopper, then back to me. "I see you've been through a lot." I nodded. There was a long pause between us. Finally, Sylvia spoke. "Well, I will explain everything to you in a bit. Right now, you need to get some rest." I nodded. Sylvia stayed for a little bit to make sure I ate, then left me with World Stopper. After I was done with my food and drink, he took my tray and put it on the bedside table. I laid back down. World Stopper took my hand. We sat silently for a while. Finally, I talked to him. "I miss Mom," I told him. "I did. I miss her smile and her embraces and the way she would brush my hair before bed each night. Her kisses." The air went somber. He understood. I felt his warmth squeeze me the way it did back on the plane. "When do we get to go back?" The air went flat, as it did when I asked him about Egypt. For a long time, nothing was passed between us. Panic gathered in my chest. Even World Stopper, my closest friend, my sole companion, couldn't tell me. Finally, I felt a buzz in my chest, along with an ache. I understood his message. "If I can ever take you back, I will." I knew he meant it, but there was something about that ache that told me that time wouldn't be soon. I sat up again and squeezed him, holding on as tightly as I could. I let myself have another cry as he held me. When I was done, I flopped down on my stomach. I reached out my hand so World Stopper could hold it. As I grasped his hand, sleep somehow consumed me. The next morning always stands out as pretty vivid to me. This is probably because it was the kind of thing that would be considered very traumatizing for a small child. I always think of it as the point where I knew my life was going to change, that things would never be the same again, that I knew I was never going back home. I knew these things because they were told to me directly at the breakfast table. The tablecloth smelled just as old as the rest of the things in the house. There was an English muffin in front of me, along with a cup of tea. Sylvia sat across from me. A figure hovered behind her, a great, glowing winged silhouette. It had an ominous presence, and it almost felt as if it was staring at me, though it didn't actually have eyes. It must have been her own guardian. Our meal started out silent. I took a few bites of my English muffin. I could feel World Stopper behind me, his aura tense. I could tell he didn't feel any more comfortable at this breakfast than I did. Finally, Sylvia spoke. "I believe that I have some things to tell you," she said firmly. I looked up for my food. "I know you've been missing your home. That's what World Stopper says." I looked back at him. He gave a gentle nod. "I explained to Zelgog," he told me. "Sylvia's guardian." I nodded, looking over at the white silhouette. Sylvia's voice broke into my thoughts. You're never going back home. My attention snapped back to her. Never. I knew that couldn't be right. World Stopper said we'd go back when we could. The memory of his silence before he answered seeped into my mind. We would be able to go back, right? I felt a shock in the air. World Stopper was also surprised by her answer. Still, that didn't keep her from going on. I'm sorry, but it is the truth. If you return, the government will just come for you again, she continued. They always will, and your parents will not protect you. Heat rushed into my face. They were my parents. They loved me. How could she say that? Then I remembered the cars, the men in suits, my mother's face as she told me I was going away, and my father's last words. You monster. No! I yelled, trying to ignore the feeling that my stomach was sinking in. They're my parents! They love me! I know you want to believe that, but it is no longer true, said Sylvia, her voice steady as a boat on a calm lake. The words pricked at my heart, and I wanted to yell at her. I could feel Worldstopper's anger rising, too. They will not stop the authorities from coming after you, she said. Those men in black who came for you, they're after you because you are a daughter of Lord Kronos. A daughter of Lord Kronos? No, that wasn't possible. Mom and Dad were my only parents. I didn't even know who this Kronos was. The only place I had even heard the name was from my uncle, when he spoke of how he was the reason my father feared my mother wouldn't return from Egypt. I felt the air flatten, still tingling with Worldstopper's anger. My own breathing slowed. Lord Kronos? I asked. Correct, Sylvia said. I assume that you have heard at least a little about him from your parents or friends. He was a soul sucker, and a powerful one at that. My stomach screwed into a knot. Soul sucker. I had never heard the term before, and it didn't sound good at all. I knew what a soul was, the life energy within a person, but I'd never heard of anything being able to suck it. He made homes in all places around the globe, hunting victims to drain of their souls, Sylvia continued. He was feared universally. He slaughtered thousands just to drain their essence for his own immortality. I felt the lump in my stomach tighten and the tears pooling in my eyes. Every inch of my body seemed to solidify. Slaughter? This man, Kronos, had killed thousands of people and taken their souls? In my home, I had never really heard of death or tragedy on the scale that was being described to me then. Images of what lifeless bodies must have looked like flickered in my mind. And I was being told this man who killed and sucked away life was my father. The air was burning with Worldstopper's anger. He was clearly not pleased with how this conversation was going. Sylvia didn't stop. Until he was slayed back in Cairo 5 years ago. However, humanity has not forgiven his sins, she said. There was a pause between us. Finally, I choked out some words. He's not my dad, I said, my tears beginning to bubble over. I had a dad at home, who sat next to me on the couch at night, who would hold me and my mother close, and who called me a monster. He is, Sylvia said. I'm sorry, but it's true. There is proof of it. You inherited his guardian, Worldstopper. I looked up at him. No, that was definitely not true. Worldstopper was always beside me when I needed him. He was my closest friend, my most trusted companion. He always gave me comfort when I needed it. He saved me from those men in black suits. I always knew I could trust him, even when things were so dark and frightening and uncertain I felt I could hardly breathe. He didn't have anything to do with this Lord Kronos. He never would. The air suddenly went completely silent. Worldstopper's eyes moved downward. I felt a chill from him. She's lying about you, I told him. No response. Uncertainty crept into my stomach. Right? I asked. Finally, the air gave a low hum. His solemn message seeped into my mind. She wasn't lying. It was as if something had pierced my chest. The floodgates finally opened and hot tears boiled out of my eyes. My face grew red and my screams grew so loud they pierced my own ears. Worldstopper tried to seal his warmth around me, but I pushed it back. I did not want to be held. His heat slowly drew away and faded. I yelled out over and over again, "No! No! No!" It was the only thing I could do, try to reject this harsh reality, make it disappear. I wanted to go home. I wanted my parents. I wanted this all to go away. It wasn't possible that this Kronos was my father, that my parents no longer loved me, that I would never get to see my home again. Yet now I knew I couldn't deny it. Worldstopper had told me it was true, that he was Kronos' guardian. Worldstopper would never, ever lie to me. Sylvia watched me, her face unmoving. I looked up at her, eyes watering, teeth pressed together as if daring her to say something. "I'm sorry," she said, "but this is the truth." Never had I felt such a hatred burning in my chest as I did then. I glared at her with eyes full of flames. "I want to go home!" I spat. "I'm sorry," Sylvia said again, "but you can't." "No!" I protested. "I know you want to return home, but you can't." Sylvia's voice rose, finally beginning to show a tint of emotion. "If you do, you'll be taken away again. This isn't a joke. The men in black suits who came for you, they will come again. They'll always be hunting you, no matter where you go on this earth. They fear you because of what you have inherited from your father. I am truly sorry, but you have to stay here." I grit my teeth together. "No!" I screamed. "I didn't want to be hunted. And why would those men in black be the afraid ones? They were the ones who had stolen me from my home. I didn't want to stay here. I didn't even want to think about this place. And I didn't want to be around this woman who just crushed me with one terrible truth after another, saying each one as if it meant nothing." Sylvia just stared at me, as she had the entire time. She didn't speak. The only sounds in the room were my breathing and my screams. Finally, after a long time, she spoke again. "I know you aren't content with this, but I will do my best to take care of you. That is all I can promise." There's a tinge of remorse in her tone. No, that was not nearly enough for me, not after everything she had said. She was not my mother. This was not my home. I shot her a scathing glare, then let the largest scream I had in me burst out. "No! I don't want you!" I stumbled out of my seat and barreled back towards the bedroom I had been kept in. I darted under the covers and pulled them over me. I sat there, letting my tears overflow, trying to press away everything around me. I'm not sure how long I stayed there. It felt like hours. I just didn't ever want to come out. There, I could bundle myself away from the horrible truth Sylvia had told me. From everything I wanted to reject. After a long time, I heard a hum in the air. I pulled the blankets off me to see Worldstopper standing in front of the bed. He remained reserved, just putting off a gentle tingle. It was somber. It reminded me of someone shaking in the cold. He sat on the edge of the bed and gave me his gentle gaze. He asked me if there was anything he could do for me. I stared at him a moment. Part of me wanted to be mad at him for confirming that this was all really happening. It was a childish thing. I guess a lot of children do it. Get angry at the bearer of bad news even though they don't control anything they tell you about. But another part of me held me back. An ache within me that told me I couldn't be upset. He didn't want any of this whining more than I did. "I want this all to go away," I told him. He was still for a moment. Then he gave a nod. I felt the tingly warmth slowly draw up to me again. I gave it permission to come. I felt the heat enclose me. I scooted over to the edge of the bed and wrapped my little arms around him. A few more tears left over from my breakdown leaked out. My chest throbbed with his empathy. He wanted all this gone just as much as I did. I sat there holding him for a long while. Finally, I pulled my head off his chest and plopped down on the bed. I tucked my legs underneath me and looked up at him. "Is she really telling the truth?" I asked him. "That you used to belong to Kronos?" There was another pause in the air, and Worldstopper nodded. "And that he's my father?" Worldstopper nodded again. I pulled my niece close to me. That doesn't make any sense. I already have a dad. His face, when I was taken away, flickered into my mind once again. The air rumbled softly. Worldstopper told me it wasn't his place to explain that to me. I looked down at my sheets. The question that I really needed to ask came out. The one that sat in my mind like a huge stone, heavy and immovable. Do my parents hate me? Worldstopper placed a hand on my shoulder. The vibration in the air quieted. The warmth around me was soft, gentle, and tingly. He told me no, they did not hate me. That I was kind and artistic and strong and brave. That my parents knew that. Each statement came as a great throb in my chest. Then, why? I didn't need to finish. The air flattened slightly. Worldstopper stood still for a minute. A somber cold chilled my skin. He explained. It was a very big explanation for someone as little as me, but I strangely still remember it. Even after all his years on this earth, Worldstopper had yet to fully understand the nature of human beings. Their perception of the world was rarely rational. They searched endlessly for patterns to learn from, but in all the wrong places. When the world saw me, they only saw my father and all of his terrors. That was the reason for their fear. I nodded as he explained this. Your parents at heart know who you are. It is their delusions and fear that keep them from seeing clearly now, he concluded. I stared down at the bedspread. He didn't need to tell it to me that way. I knew what he really meant. My parents don't love me anymore because Kronos is my dad, I said, my voice barely there. The air went flat. No, my child, that isn't true. They love you. The vibration in my chest broke off as I scooted to the other side of the bed. I put my head between my legs. A weight like lead seemed to sink on my chest. My body felt limp. Worldstopper hovered over to the side of the bed and put a hand on my shoulder. I could feel the hum of his desperation around me. They love you. The message came as a firm pulse in my chest, that though they couldn't see beyond their fear now, they loved the person I was. I looked up at him. His eyes were serious. I wanted to be confident in his statement, but my mind wouldn't let me. They couldn't both love and fear me at the same time. Will they ever stop fearing me? I asked. There was a pause. Then, finally, a gentle throb in my chest. I cannot promise anything of humanity. However, if your parents are good, strong people, strong enough to see even past the illusions of their fear, I believe one day, yes, they will. I nodded. My parents are good. They'll see. I know it. An ache throbbed in my chest. I do hope so, my child. With some kind of sort of hope in my heart, I slid off the bed. It was only then I realized how empty my stomach felt. I hadn't eaten very much that morning, with the conversation with Sylvia and all. I headed down the hall with Worldstopper to get some food. That was a long time ago, all of that. For my first months with Sylvia, I always hoped for the news I could return to my parents, that I could once again be held in my mother's embrace and kissed by my father, that we could go for a nice walk down the street in our neighborhood, like we always used to. But now, I know that was never going to happen. It was just a fantasy Worldstopper had told me, that my parents were going to reclaim me. They may have loved me during the short time I lived with them, but after they found out about Kronos, all their love disappeared. I think that's really all I can do for today. The stuff I just said into this recorder is stuff I still have a lot of nightmares about. It's hard to talk about, really. Hard to even think about. Worldstopper? Oh, I'm just doing my audio diary. I'm okay. Don't worry. Yeah. So, anyway, that's all I have to say. I guess I should have kind of an official way to end these entries. That's another thing people usually do with audio diaries. Well, I guess I'll just sign off with maybe Akira out. I mean, it's to the point. Okay, well, I guess I got everything covered for today. Akira out. Hey, thanks for listening to The Girl Who Could Stop Time. If you're interested in getting news and updates about our podcast, please consider subscribing to our socials at AkiraGWCST on Twitter and at The Girl Who Could Stop Time on Instagram. The voice of Akira was done by Kira Fleming.
The voice of Sylvia was done by Heather Fleming.
The script for this episode was written by Kira Fleming. Title theme, Uncertainty, was composed and performed by Timothy Fleming. Ending theme, Warmth, was composed and performed by Timothy Fleming. This episode was edited using Ferrite Recording Studio. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll tune in for Akira's next entry.